Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Ostrom here, Ivan Sutter, Indianapolis Star. I'm going to have a little raspiness today. It is Mind Your Banners from March 8th, 2024. The house cold has finally darkened my doorstep. In Minneapolis is Mike Nieslick. He was there, obviously, for Indiana's win on the men's side Wednesday night. He's there this weekend for the women's team, and then we will all be joining him for the fun waiting for the men next weekend in the Twin Cities. We talked a lot, Mike, Monday about the women's postseason, so we'll just kind of set that to one side for the moment and talk about what has been a week, I would say, of real extremes for the men's team. The Hoosiers win in a pretty impressive comeback at Maryland on Sunday afternoon. Wednesday early evening, news breaks that Mike Woodson will return for a fourth season in Bloomington, that basically, just I think as much as anything to kind of quell all the speculation that had kind of started to run a little bit too wild around where things might go for IU basketball. Then Indiana, I would say, frankly, borderline dominates Minnesota at Minnesota. I thought the scoreline might have flattered Minnesota, frankly, at the end of that game. And it feels like suddenly for the first time all winter, Indiana basketball's got some real juice, some real momentum. And then that all kind of slams into a wall on Thursday evening around at least my dinner time, because I was sitting down to dinner with my kids when news broke that Liam McNeely would be asking out of his letter of intent, leaving Indiana without a single incoming recruit in 2024. And it's fair to say things have probably, the sky has darkened since then. So I guess first and foremost, it's an obvious question, but just what do you make of these last 72, 96, 120 hours?
Well, I mean, there's never good timing, right, for a five-star to decommit, but I'm not sure there was, it's pretty bad timing for Indiana in terms of where they're at. The high school 2024 class is all but, locked up everywhere. You've got two seniors at a minimum, two guys that are seniors that have eligibility left that could leave, could come back. Khalil Ware, getting projected for the NBA draft. I mean, you were already going to have to do so much work in the portal. And now not to have a single sort of high school marquee name attached to your class. I mean, it's a devastating blow. And I think you wrote this in your piece yesterday in terms of, like, there's no good way to look at this, like, no silver lining, no way to sugarcoat how significant this is, because you put all your eggs in that basket. You already had an open scholarship as well. Didn't even mention that. And now the basket has been thrown overboard.
Yeah, I guess talking about 2024 first, I mean, I think it's probably not the most important bit of fallout from this, but it is a blow. We talked all last spring and summer about Indiana was really putting so much emphasis on 2024 that to some extent they'd even really kind of passed on 2023. The idea being they were going to invest all of this recruiting capital in what they perceived to be not just a really talented class, but one that they could thrive in, one where they could, pull, just like multiple elite or borderline elite players. And that obviously kind of ultimately whittled itself down to, and there were a lot of names that floated around: Asa Newell, Jaden Mustaf. I could run back through the list, but that sort of whittled itself down to Boogie Fland, Liam McNeely, and Derek Queen. Your point guard, your wing, your big. at different times in the buildup to each of those players' commitments, Indiana was perceived to be the leader. They obviously lost Flan to Kentucky. Then they signed McNeely. And then, you know, they went on this kind of, maybe this happened in reverse. I don't remember. Maybe McNeely committed first, but then they went on this kind of like extended journey with Derek Queen before he wound up at Maryland. And so you already kind of looked at that 24 class and said, you know, not all of that hard work, not all of that investment of time and energy paid off. And, but you said, you know, but you at least have Liam McNeely, who's the sort of player Indiana needs. He's a, you know, he's a big wing. He can rebound the ball. More importantly, he is a prolific 3-point shooter. You know, that would almost certainly slot right away into big minutes, lots of shots, probably start from day one, all that. And now McNeely's gone. And so, you know, we can talk more about maybe the wider context of moving forward. But if you look back for just a moment, that 2024 class, you know, when there is, you and I both know this, fans know this, you know, a lot of our listeners will know this, for better or worse, perception is part of reality in college athletics. And when you are perceived to have, you know, essentially flopped on a class that you invested so much into, there's just that's not good. That is a real, you know, kind of body blow.
Well, I think it goes, I think the perception piece is larger than this class right now. And I think the perception of Indiana basketball.
No doubt. I just mean like this is, that is part of it. Like that, but is, I'm saying, that yes, becomes but I'm a saying, bigger chunk of it.
I'm saying it's more of a global view right now of the program being, you know, and I think that it's perceived more of a down year than it is. And I don't think Mike Woodson sort of helped himself with sort of, being sort of testy about, you know, even on Wednesday about, look, I get why he approached it the way he did about saying, you know, I don't want to talk about I'm coming back. I shouldn't have to justify myself. It's not necessarily justify. I think he can use the media and use these moments to be differently, to, you know, like college basketball is different than the NBA where it's messaging matters. And I think the message he's letting the he's not getting the message I think he wants or needs to get out right now. And I think this Liam McNeely piece has really added to that. Didn't want to talk about that today. And saying I'm not going to talk about high school recruiting with you guys, I get the timing of it. You know, you could say, well, we still got senior day, we still got the tournament, but just I don't think he's doing himself any favors, because right now I think Indiana basketball needs a better message about what's going on and kind of where the program is at. Cause I don't think the season was as bad as, you know, a lot of fans are making it out to be, you know, that they've gone through some bumps in the road. Like if Mackenzie Mbaku wins freshman of the year, they win a game or two of the tournament, you know, that's not a bad season from where this roster started. You know, they could have, maybe the ceiling was a little bit higher, but if everything came together earlier, but I just think the messaging right now is a real issue.
No, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, I have been among those who, you know, I mean, I think I've had a lot of people call this season a disaster to me, you know, in social media, even just privately, people I know. And I've sort of said, like, listen, I've seen disaster. Like this, you know, this isn't disaster.
What years are disasters?
I mean, like I have kind of consistently, and I want to circle back to this in a bit. I've consistently compared this season to Tom Crean's, I guess it was his sixth season. They finished 17-15, but they were only 7-11 in the conference. They lost their last three. They lost, I'm just looking at it right now, they lost 7 of their last 10. They were good defensively, but they were, I mean, they could not shoot the ball to save their lives. Twos, threes, free throws. They finished 126th in adjusted offensive efficiency. They were really young, lots of freshmen and sophomores, a lot of turnover. They lost 7 guys off the team that won the Big Ten the previous year, and it just never gelled. And, you know, I think the big difference between this season and that season, first of all, Indiana's been a little bit more competitive in the Big Ten this season than it was that season in terms of raw numbers. Indiana arguably had some better wins that season, but like, you know, that team finished 7-11. This one at worst is going to finish 9-11 with obviously the 20 game schedule as opposed to the 18 game schedule. That team also had, without wanting to like sort of say like, you know, this is worse than that or dredge up old history, that team probably had more off the court concerns than this one does. And I've just said like, you know, and then obviously there was the season Kelvin Sampson got fired. There were the first couple seasons of Tom Crean's tenure, which weren't necessarily disasters that anyone didn't expect. You know, I mean, people expected Indiana to struggle, but I mean, you know, Tom Crean won 27 games across his first 3 years, or 28 games, excuse me, across his first 3 years. Like, this is just disappointing. It's not a disaster. It's just a slight disappointment. I, you know, it's funny. Like, this is the time of year where I always kind of think about revisiting my preseason Big Ten poll, and I think I picked Indiana sixth or seventh. If they win on Sunday, they're going to finish sixth or seventh. Like that, you know, I mean, finishing
eighth or ninth isn't like a huge.
It's not a huge deviation. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, Rutgers beating Wisconsin means that they can't play Thursday. Like that, they're locked out of Wednesday. They'll begin to play Thursday. We just don't know when or where in the Big Ten tournament. And the point is, like, you know, this team has undeniably underperformed even its own expectations, but not to the degree that I think people perceive, and not sort of at the level of sort of like, oh, it's an embarrassment or it's a disaster. It's like, it's not, it's a season that did not go according to plan, and those have to be allowable. But then what, you know, I think you're right that there have been times when messaging has, you know, and maybe starting with Mike Woodson, though probably not limited to him, Indiana's ability or inability to sort of control the narrative has let the program down a little bit. I've also been around this program long enough, and I get fans who get frustrated when I say this, but I'll keep saying it because I do believe it. You know, this program is prone to a level of sort of toxic panic that can become destructive very quickly. And I think there's been an element of that too. You know, I don't think Liam McNeely has spoken much on his decision to open up. If he has, I haven't seen it yet. But you know, I can tell you there have been times in the past when Indiana has been in line for high ranking players, you know, 5-star or high 4-star players that looked like they were all but locked to Indiana. And then basically, you know, the atmosphere on social media and the sort of the perception that lent of what was going on around the program kind of drove them off. And that's not necessarily under Mike Woodson. It certainly happened under Archie Miller. And my point is, it's, you know, it's kind of this constant of like, well, the coach changes, the conference changes, the challenge changes, and yet Indiana can't kind of get away from this, you know, this fight basically that it's kind of consistently losing to control the environment around the program. And obviously there will be people who say, well, listen, you know, Indiana fans have put up with a lot over the last number of whatever years. I said this to somebody yesterday, I forget who it was, but you know, that they said, like, you know, to the neutral, do you think Indiana is one of the craziest or most intense or emotional fan bases in the country? And I said, maybe, but like, make Kansas go 37 years without winning a national title and see how their fans act. You know, make Kentucky go 22 years without a Final Four and not really even a moment when you threaten, not even an Elite Eight since, and see how Kentucky fans act. See how, like, you know, basically challenge any other fan base that has the history and at least a certain level of justifiable expectation that Indiana has, to go as long as Indiana has without meeting those expectations consistently at all. And you know, and then see how they respond, because I understand where it comes from with Indiana fans. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, it's everybody's fault and it's nobody's fault, but it is a thing that just, you know, it's like once it bolts the barn, man, like, it is really hard to control. And it's kind of one of those, and you know, obviously this is just Liam McNeely, but you know, you mentioned earlier, just kind of, you don't know what else Indiana's going to lose off this season. Best case scenario, they're going to lose two starters and a key reserve and have 4 scholarships to fill. That's the absolute best case scenario, if we assume that Khalil Ware goes to the draft, like I think everyone does. That is a pretty optimistic scenario. And we're at kind of a time of year when actually there should be some optimism around this. They've been playing well. They've won three games.
Well, that's, I think,
And
that is part of the,
it just, you know, it's not slowing down.
Well, I think part of the problem is it's hard to be optimistic when the core of what is driving the optimism might not be here next year. Like, if in theory this roster turned over and you just lost X, and I think we talked about this last podcast, if you just lost X and Anthony Walker and maybe one other piece, you know, the core of Khalil Ware, Mackenzie Ibaka, and Malik Renew would be, I think, something to be optimistic about. But, like, best case scenario, you keep one out of the three of those right now, you know, in sort of the portal era draft, you know, sort of interest with Khalil Ware. And so I think that's part of the problem. And that's, I think, why Mike Woodson should be more upfront and sort of in talking about his vision, his sort of his strategy. And, you know, and I know he feels like it's like, I think it's personal where he's like, I don't have to justify my credentials. And I don't think it's that. I think it's more like,
I don't think people are asking, you know, basically him to prove himself.
Which I think is what he thinks. Like he's like, I have done this 30 years. And it's like, yeah. And that's why you're in the position you're in. But I still think
people need to know why, like, it's going to be okay.
Well, and it's for recruiting, right? It's different than the NBA where you're just offering money and you're, you know, you have, that's it. Right. And maybe that's how college is coming, but it's not totally there yet. And you've got to see success and you've got to see the plan. And I mean, if I was Liam McNeely, I'd certainly be worried about who I'd be playing with next year and what this team looks like when there's no other recruits, when there's already open roster spots. And you sort of say, like, what does this roster look like? I mean, it's hard to figure it out. And you know, obviously he's talked about hitting the portal hard, but I think it needs to go beyond that. And I do think it's hard. I think the optimism from this upswing goes away when you think, like, well, maybe this core is not this. None of what's making this team successful next year will be back, essentially.
And it's tough because, again, like I've returned to that comparison from 10 years ago, and I remember, you know, that team, and for all its flaws, you know, it still had a point guard who would go on to become an All-American, who you could see was, you know, had the potential, you know, to kind of be bound for that level. It had some promising young players that wound up not working out in Indiana, like Stan Robinson and Jeremy Hollowell. But at the time, you could still sort of see a certain measure of kind of like they might be able to provide some upside, you know, and it had a building block player like Troy Williams, who also became, I think, honorable mention all Big Ten the year Indiana won its second Big Ten title under Tom. And so the point is there were still sort of building blocks there. And then Indiana, you know, I'm struggling to remember who Indiana signed in 2014 other than James Blackmon, but James Blackmon was a McDonald's All-American shooting guard who came in and was almost immediately one of the best shooters in the Big Ten. And so the point was, it was, you know, there was still kind of this path forward or this path out. I think there's this, and I don't want this to devolve into some sort of discussion of job security, because we're beat writers and it's not really our place to, like, opine on. And I recognize there's an extent to which we are opining in any podcast, but it shouldn't be our place to sort of say, well, this needs to happen or that needs to happen. But I do think that part of, like, the whole sort of portal NIL, certainly player movement, you know, sort of era changes. I think I think we're still figuring out how it changes the calculus of basically, like, what is an acceptable runway for a coach to get to try and take off. Because I think that, you know, I think back to that 2014 team. I couldn't tell you this right now, obviously, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth. And, you know, I hope nobody's taking this as me demeaning the legacy of former players or anything. But I remember how toxic it was 1 year removed. I mean, you know, we've talked so much about Mike Woodson, how he's gotten no grace despite the fact that he went to back-to-back NCAA tournaments. He finished second in the Big Ten last year, got to the round of 32, et cetera. That was 1 year removed from a Big Ten championship. Now, it was also 1 year removed from a really frustrating exit from the Big Ten or the NCAA tournament, the Syracuse game. You know, Indiana fans had invested so much emotional capital in that team that was preseason number one overall, and it just kind of ran out of gas. And it probably peaked in basically mid-late February instead of mid-late March. And ultimately there was, you know, sort of a feeling that that was a real opportunity wasted. But, you know, it was still really toxic and ugly. And, you know, there was a lot of frustration and concern around just kind of the state of the program at that time. And, I just sort of wonder, in the portal era, would that team have stayed together? And again, I'm not trying to put words in anybody's mouth. I'm not trying to suggest, no one whispered things to me back then. And God, if they had, I wouldn't remember them, because I've, you know, gained 50 pounds and two kids since. So like I've basically reset my brain three times in the decade since then. But, you know, I just think back to then and how similar the environment was around the program. And I wonder if that group would have stayed together, even to the extent that it did, that ultimately led to winning the league 2 years later. Or would Indiana have wound up in a situation like, you know, I think a lot of people fear they will face. I don't want to go over the top and speculating, you know, who might transfer or whatever, but I think a lot of people, you know, fear that in, you know, Indiana will face that prospect here now of, you know, the direction's not great, the long-term outlook is murky, you know, fans are really frustrated and angry, the whole situation just kind of has turned into this kind of toxic brew. Well, then maybe I'll just leave. You know, the portal's ease of use, there'll be NIL opportunities elsewhere, I'll just go somewhere that's not so stressful, somewhere that's not so, you know, sort of like intense. And that's, well, one of those.
It becomes Groundhog Day, because next year is like, well, we had
10. It becomes really, yeah. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Ten new faces this year. That was like the whole reason why there was, you know, this, there was a rebuilding year. And next year, if you have 10 new faces, you know, you're going to be in the same situation. One, you know, you mentioned toxic. There have been more up and down swings, but I mean, you're familiar with this. Auburn football, which I covered, had a very familiar vibe to what's going, or similar vibe to what's going on here, that they would eat their own. That was a fan base that drove away Bo Nix, who was, you know, it's like the quarterback that was paid to play at Auburn.
People who don't know, he covered Auburn. My stepmother's whole family went to Auburn. Bo Nix's father, Patrick, was like a legendary Auburn quarterback back in the 90s. And when Bo Nix committed to Auburn, it was, you know, like my family joked calling him Auburn Jesus, that like it was, you know.
And that wasn't a joke. I think that, I mean, that
yeah. was like serious. And, I mean, and the fan was, and the fan base literally drove him to Oregon, where he became a Heisman finalist.
So, I mean, like that, you know, that's kind of, I think we're in, I mean, that's, I mean, I would say they're very similar, to be honest. Like that's, I think, and Auburn's gone through more extreme ups and downs, you know, but.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever, I don't think like Auburn is kind of like the poster child for all of this. Like no,
yes,
nobody
has. Yes, this is, yeah.
Yeah.
There are fan bases that go through it, but it's not great. it's not a good situation when, you know, the discussion is, well, did they contribute to that atmosphere? And that's, but that's why I think you have to have Mike Woodson needs to be, I mean, a little more savvy and a little more, you know, just have a better plan for how to get his message out. To try to get this thing turned around, because I do think it matters here in the next 12 months. It's gonna be a long off season. Whatever happens with the portal, whatever happens with who he signs, it's just gonna be hard for him to sort of overcome this, I think.
It's also just, you know, through his first couple seasons, he talked about, you know, the expectation is championships. The expectation is Big Ten titles, Final Fours. And you understand why. Like, you know, no coach can come in and be like, hey, the expectation is to just try and get on the bubble and then, like, see where we are from there. Like, you have to set the bar that high.
But if you say your expectation, I'd just like to feel the team.
But, you know, this season in particular, in part probably because, you know, he's understood, like, I can't sit here and talk about winning the Big Ten when we're underwater, you know, in terms of conference record and stuff like that. He has said things that I think are probably even more, not that he didn't come here to win championships, but I think things that almost were more sort of like fundamentally important to him when he took the job chiefly among them was just sort of like, I came here to just try and kind of make, I think he said, like, make it better, get it on stable footing, basically. And, you know, I think what has surprised me is I thought he had, essentially, that, you know, when I didn't think that the first 2 years were some sort of like, oh my God, you know, that's incredible. And, you know, Indiana's back. This program is ready to just take off. But I just sort of thought, okay, you know, they'd missed five straight NCAA tournaments. They only had one player drafted in like the previous 4 years, and it turned into five when they didn't have anybody drafted his first year. They were not competing in recruiting at a level that was going to get them, you know, Jalen Hood-Schifino's or Tamar Bates's or, you know, Liam McNeely's, or, you know, frankly, they weren't even necessarily competing at a level that was getting them in the final three for Boogie Fland, you know, or Derek Queen. And it just sort of felt like, okay, like, you know, the thing he did was he came in and he stabilized it and he rebuilt Indiana's reputation as a place that elite players could go develop. And he, you know, he obviously redressed the glaring imbalance in the rivalry with Purdue. He got Indiana back into some really big time non-conference, you know, games, and didn't win all of them, but he got Indiana back onto those stages and in those conversations. You know, eventually, obviously, got Indiana into Atlantis, got Indiana back into the Kentucky series, all these different
kinds. And for bad as this season's been, I mean, Khalil Ware is a perfect example of a reclamation project. Like, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's another, I think, win for Mike Woodson, to be honest.
I mean, McKenzie and Mbako, whatever happens the rest of the season is another. I mean, like, you know, people talk about his shooting and all that and his scoring, and yeah, it's been great. And I wrote something today that I think he's making a really strong late case for Big Ten Freshman of the Year. But, like, go watch him play defense in November and then watch him play defense now. It's not like I can't remember a player who is certainly in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, an Indiana player who made a more visibly demonstrable improvement in just one aspect of their game than McKenzie Mbako on defense. I mean, he looked conceptually lost at times in November, and now he's not necessarily some lockdown defender, but, you know, I mean, he got the Cam Christie assignment a lot on Wednesday night, and for the second time in as many IU Minnesota games this year, he outplayed Cam Christie pretty roundly at both ends of the floor. So it's just kind of, you know, like, again, like, it, a lot of this, number one, isn't as bad as I would argue a lot of people perceive it to be. In, you know, like, the team, the program, the moment right now, today, not talking about what the outlook past this season is or the prospects for 2025 or whatever, but like this right here, like Indiana going into Senior Day Sunday against Michigan State. And to your point, even through what even Mike Woodson himself would probably classify a disappointing season, there's still been some real positives that he could point to and say, you know, my process still works. My stuff still plays. I'm still able to kind of do these things that should make us competitive. But then you get to this, and I mean, you know, like I said, you mentioned Auburn. Auburn is like, you know, the sort of like, Auburn is the after picture of steroid use of all of these, like, just the number of things dating back to, you know, interviewing Bobby Petrino on a plane, on a tarmac, trying to oust Tommy Tuberville, the Cam Newton season, then firing Gene Chizik for his offensive coordinator, and then almost having the Cam Newton season right away with a kid who, by the way, was supposed to go to Indiana. Nick Marshall was supposed to go to Indiana and play corner. Instead, he went to Auburn and played QB and like was a minute and a half away from winning a national championship. And then that obviously eventually cratered, and it just nobody does that quite like Auburn. But, you know, it's a fair comparison right now for this program in terms of, once you lose it, like, you, it's so hard to get it back, if it's possible at all. And it is one of those where it feels like that there shouldn't be, you know, kind of the markers, the mile markers around Indiana right now shouldn't necessarily suggest that this is the road they're on, but they are. And I just, I don't know how, I don't, you know, I don't know how that gets fixed.
Well, yeah, and then you kind of throw in the 2024 of it all in terms of, like, the recruiting, and it's like, you know, they're going to have to create a real quick path to sort of getting some impact players. You know, to be honest, like, I mean, if you're the Indiana sort of NIL people, I mean, Godfather offered a clue where to stay and not I mean, you know, that might be the best path, to be honest, to try to get that done. But I mean, in terms of, I mean, what do you think the difficulty level of it is of rebuilding this roster now? You know, I know we don't know all the pieces he's going to need to fill, but I mean, you know, I know you touched on this in your story, but I mean, how difficult do you, I mean, going into this
You're gonna need
offseason,
to
how
be, I
difficult
mean,
is it?
you're already in a situation where you're gonna need to be near perfect. You know, where like you can't, you know, last year they got heavily involved in like Peyton Sparks, Khalil Ware, Dalton Knecht, Chris Ledlam. You know, those were probably the guys that it, and there were some others as well. You know, they kicked the tires on Caleb Love. They were in and around there on Caden Shedrick. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. And it sort of felt like they kind of batted 500 or so, you know, and there were times that, you know, I don't think they ever got connect on campus. There was a time when they were perceived to be, you know, the leader for Chris Ledlam, and listen, you know, Chris Ledlam has gone to St. John's and been fine. He's averaging 9.4 points and 7 rebounds per game, and he's shooting under 30% from three. So I don't, Chris Ledlam isn't necessarily like what this team is missing, so to speak. But he was still an impact transfer at Harvard, and you know, Indiana at one time was perceived to be sort of the favorite to get him, and then they didn't. Now they, I'm guessing, excuse me, they probably don't get McKenzie Mbako if they get Chris Ledlam, because it feels like, you know, Mbako looks at it and says, "Well, my spot on the roster is already filled." But the point is, they targeted this big group. They probably got half, maybe a little under half of what they targeted, and you said, "Well, that's not a bad haul." You know, like that's, you're not going to win every single recruitment. Other schools have NIL too. Other schools have coaches that can make a compelling pitch and, you know, roles and playing time and shots and systems and whatever. And, you know, listen, I mean, you can make an argument that they had some success in the portal. I mean, Khalil Ware is arguably the best player on the team. Anthony Walker, you know, I think Anthony Walker has probably been a little bit of what we looked at Peyton Sparks' statistics over 2 seasons at Ball State and thought he might be for Indiana, which is just kind of like an impact change of pace reserve forward. So I don't even think they necessarily did a horrible job in the portal last year, but I think that they'd be in a situation where even under a reasonable best case scenario, where let's say, you know, because I think, you know, you say a godfather offer for Khalil Ware. I think the problem you have there is this is perceived to be an incredibly weak draft. And so it's just sort of one of those, like, if you have genuine appeal, this is the kind of draft you don't pass up, because you never mind the fact that, like, you know, teams are going to look at Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama, and they're going to say, you know, I want a piece of that. I want a player who maybe can play like that a little bit. And I don't think Khalil Ware is as good as either of those players, but teams are going to, you know, that sort of style of five is really appealing right now for a number of obvious reasons. But this is also just kind of the sort of draft that you tend to tell guys who could be in and around the first round, like I think Ware can be, because you don't pass this draft up because it is perceived to be so soft, it's perceived to be so weak. So let's assume you lose Ware, let's assume you lose obviously Xavier Johnson and Anthony Walker, and then like let's just, you know, pull two,
I mean, you're
maybe
probably
not,
losing two, just two names, right?
yeah,
Two,
just to say pull two names out of a hat, even if you want to.
and you had the open slot. I mean, so
If
it's
you,
like,
even if you want to, under an optimistic sort of scenario, say the other three starters all come back, Galloway and Mbako renew, which, you know, I don't want to speculate on individual names without, you know, hard and fast whatever behind it. But even if you
but the
assume that,
percentages say
yeah,
that's
even if you assume
optimistic.
that two leave and none of those three are among the two, you've still got six open scholarships, two starting spots to fill, and frankly, a bench that's, you know, just never consistently given you enough this season that you've got to address as well, all while still needing to figure out a way to be better defensively, better shooting threes, on and on and on. I mean, it's like a portal window where you have to be all but perfect, and nobody can expect that. Nobody can expect to, you know, hit
Well, it's a
on
portal,
like,
and it's a portal. It's a number, and it's like an urgency that you'd expect of like what Kurt Cignetti was dealing with when you take over a program, not when you've had sort of an or what you expect from like a Michigan where they bottom out and everybody's just, you know, flees. It's sort of a weird. It's a very strange spot because, as you've talked about, the season wasn't that, and so The amount of urgency they're going to have sort of is strange considering they didn't have that bottom out year, but the numbers are going to sort of feel like it, I think, when they get to the portal season.
We'll leave it there. It is going to be a fascinating couple of weeks for Indiana. I'll throw this in at the back end. I don't know that this is necessarily like a hard and fast thing. I've included this in a couple of things I've written. If Indiana does not make the NCAA tournament, which I think remains, the odds remain very long there, I would be pretty surprised to see the Hoosiers in the NIT in any case. I just don't, and that's not necessarily something that is about, oh, let's make sure that Mike Woodson doesn't get overexposed, or these guys will all quit. Or there's just not a lot of appetite for the modern appetite for the NIT. And some people like that, some people don't care. There's been a lot of talk about basically, is there any way to revitalize interest in that tournament? Because it does have a purpose for a lot of programs, but I just don't think Indiana's going to wind up, seeing, even if invited. Maybe I'm wrong, or maybe Indiana winds up in a situation where they're compelled to go, because I know they've changed the rules around, like, basically how they divvy up those bids and who gets to go and whatever else. So I might be missing something, in Indiana either feels compelled to go or changes its mind. I would be surprised at this point if Indiana is not in the field of 68, if there is a postseason beyond that for the Hoosiers. So we'll leave it there. He's Mike Nislick. I'm Zach Osterman, for the Herald Times, for the Indianapolis Star. This has been Mind Your Banners for March 8th, 2024. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.